ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमति भक्तवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामने। नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शनिवारी पश्चात्पते शतादने श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Reading from Canto 9, Chapter 4, Verse 65. Ye dara putrata pranan vittam imam param hitvam mam sharanam yata katam tams chaktam utsahe he dara gara putrapta pranan vittam imam param hitvam mam sharanam yata katam tams chaktam utsahe. Those devotees of mine, Dara, wife, Agara, house, Putra, children, sons, Apta, relatives, society, Pranan, even life, Vittam, wealth, Imam, all these, Param, elevation to heavenly planets, are becoming one by merging into Brahman. Hitva, giving up, mam, unto me, sharanam, shelter, yata, having taken, katam, how, tan, such persons, chaptum, to give them up, utsahe, can I be enthusiastic in that way? Translation: since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me without any desire for material improvements in this life or the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? Purport: the Supreme Personality of God is worshipped by the words Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. Thus he is the well-wisher of the Brahmanas. Durvasa Muni was certainly a very great Brahmana, but because he was a non-devotee, he could not sacrifice everything in devotional service. Great mystic yogis are actually self-interested. The proof is that when Durvasa Muni created a demon to kill Maharaj Ambarish, the king stayed fixed in his place, praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depending solely and wholly on him. Whereas when Durvasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, by the supreme will of the Lord, he was so perturbed that he fled all over the world and tried to take shelter of every nook and corner of the universe. At last, in fear of his life, he approached Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was so interested in his own body that he wanted to kill the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, he did not have any very good intelligence. And how can an unintelligent person be delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The Lord certainly tried to give all protection to his devotees, who have given up everything for the sake of serving him. Another point in this verse is that attachment to dar agara putrapta, home, wife, children, friendship, society, and love, is not the way to achieve the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to be attached to hearth and home for material. One who is attached to hearth and home for material pleasure cannot become a pure devotee. Sometimes a pure devotee may have a habit or attraction for wife, children, and home, but at the same time want to serve the Supreme Lord to the best of his ability. For such a devotee, the Lord makes a special arrangement to take away the objects of his false attachment, and thus free him from the attachment to wife, home, children, friends, and so on. It's a special mercy bestowed upon the devotee to bring him back home, back to Godhead. Translation, since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, and riches, and even their lives simply to serve me, without any desire for material improvement in this life or the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? In the last verse, Vishnu expressed that he cannot do anything apart from his devotees. He cannot enjoy his kingdom in the spiritual world without his devotees. He is so attached to them. And he's very dependent on his devotees. So here he gives a reason, in a sense, a reason why he is so attached to his devotee. So the devotee has given up everything in the material world. And here he gives the list of the probable attachments: wife, house, children, relatives and friends, wealth, prana, one's life. These are attachments that we have. And the devotee gives all these things up in exchange for serving the Lord, dedicating himself to the Lord. So if the devotee does this, then the Lord feels obligated. This person has given up everything for me. So I cannot fail to support this devotee. I have to support him at all times. He has given up everything for me, and therefore I have to do everything for him. So this is the nature of an affectionate relationship. The devotee gives up everything to serve the Lord. His only interest is the Supreme Lord. And the Lord sees that the devotee has given up everything for him. So therefore, the Lord wants to give everything to the devotee. There's an equal response. Of course, the devotees are of various types. We have pure devotees in the spiritual world, we have devotees in the material world, and we have devotees of different types, those in sadhana, those in bhava, and those in prema. And according to their advancement, they'll be giving up more and more and more. So correspondingly, the Lord will respond to these different devotees according to the degree of their surrender. One who gives up everything to the Supreme Lord gets 100% response from the Lord. That is natural. And one who gives a little bit gets a little from the Lord. Nevertheless, everybody gives up something, so they get some response from the Lord. He's very interested in all the devotees. When the Lord sees the devotee in this material world who has given up everything for him in some difficult circumstances, then the Lord is willing to help him out. Even if he breaks all of the rules and he breaks the laws of material nature, whatever. He breaks the laws of karma, that doesn't matter. The Lord is willing to do anything for his devotee. Though he generally is not willing to do that for other people. So therefore, on behalf of the devotee, the Lord will do anything. Save his devotee under any circumstance. So we see that Draupadi, when she called out for the Lord, then the Lord responded by supplying cloth to her, unlimited cloth. Even though this was rather unusual from the point of view of material nature, how can unlimited cloth come from nowhere? Yet he did this to protect his devotee who was in distress. So the Lord makes a promise, Name Bhakta Pranasyati, my devotee is never vanquished. And he displays this in relation to his pure devotees. So we see this over and over. one of the topics of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam has 10 topics. Sarga and Visarga and Stiti, Poshana, Uti, Asraya, what's the other, Niroda, these things, such things, topics. So one is Poshana, the protection of the Lord, how the Lord protects his devotees. So topics. So the Bhagavatam illustrates the protection that the Lord gives to his devotees. So we see how Narasimhadev or Vishnu protects Prahlad, or how he Krishna protects his devotees in Vrindavan when the demons come, he protects them, or in Dwarka also when demons are there, Krishna protects his devotees. So this is natural for the Supreme Lord, for his pure devotees. He'll protect them in any circumstance. And even in the material world, for the pure devotee who has expended all of his karmas, he has no more karmas left, he's a pure devotee, there may be a pattern of karma left there. The Lord, because we have a body and we have a lifespan and we're in the material world, then there looks like a pattern of karma left for the pure devotee, though it's not karma. It is simply under the Supreme Lord at that time. There's no force of material nature acting on the devotee. It is only up to the Supreme Lord. So whatever happens to the pure devotee in the material world is not karma. It is the will of the Lord for his own purposes. So we should never think, therefore, that the great devotees of the Lord, the pure devotees, are suffering karmas in the material world if some unfortunate incident happens to them. It is simply some arrangement of the Supreme Lord. For instance, the Pandavas were put into great difficulties for many, many years. It's not karma that they're suffering. It is arrangement of the Lord only for his own purposes. So therefore the Lord is always concerned about his pure devotees, and even when his apparent suffering in the material world is some arrangement by the Lord for his own purposes and his pastimes. And when the devotee is put in great difficulty, then the Lord will also rescue him. If he is attacked by the demons, the Lord will help him. If he's suffering in some way, the Lord will help out in any case. So this is the nature of the Supreme Lord. We call this mercy, doya or karuna. This is also one rasa. One of the rasas is karunya. It can also be called pity, that one shows concern for someone who is helpless. For instance, Mother Yasoda feels concern for Krishna because he's a small baby, and therefore she wants to take care of him. Krishna is helpless, he cannot feed himself, he cannot protect himself. So Mother Yasoda has a rasa of karuna rasa, wants to protect him out of concern. And so Krishna also has this rasa in relation to the devotees in the material world. They are helpless. In fact, for all the jivas in the material world, even if they're not devotees, Krishna has this feeling of compassion and concern. And when the devotee develops a little faith and begins to serve him and respond favorably by his free will, then the Lord is very, very moved by that. And he wants to show him more mercy. And at that point, of course, the devotee is ready to accept mercy. When the Lord gives mercy to help in advance, the devotee takes that and he begins devotional service. He begins to give up or sacrifice material things for the Supreme Lord's pleasure. So this is one of the also one of the prerequisites for bhakti, one of the first angas, to give up one's own enjoyment for serving the Lord. Give up my enjoyment in order to serve the Lord. In other words, we have to have some attitude of understanding that my enjoyment in the world is actually insignificant, even though we're attached to it still. We should have an idea that this material world and everything, house, family, wife, children, all this is actually not very significant, and I have to give it up eventually. And therefore I should engage more and more in serving the Lord, and through that we develop attachment to the Lord, and we give up more attachment.
That's a qualification for bhakti. And if we don't have that, it is very difficult to advance. Huh? If we want to stay in the material world and simultaneously want something spiritual, it's not a very good combination. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the example that if we want the material enjoyment plus we want Krishna, it is contradictory. We can't simultaneously want to surrender and want to stay in the material world. They're opposite things. If I want to enjoy, I don't want to surrender to Krishna. Surrender to Krishna means I give up my enjoyment. If I want my enjoyment, I don't want to surrender to Krishna. So if I say I want to go to the spiritual world and I want to stay in the material world, this is opposite tendencies. It's a contradiction. It cannot exist. Either one or the other. So Lord Chaitanya said it's like a person on a boat. He's on a boat, on his, two boats in the river, like in Swarup Ganj in the river, and you get the little boats, you know. And you put one foot in one boat, one foot in another boat. It's a very unstable position. Usually the boats will go apart and you'll fall in the water. You have one foot in one foot in the other, the boats will go apart. So that's like trying to do spiritual life, material life simultaneously and get enjoyment from both. It's not a stable position. You choose one or the other. If you want the material enjoyment, don't ask for the spiritual thing. Just go for material enjoyment. Try to struggle and get something. Do some punyas and get. If you want spiritual, then you give up the material. So if you want material enjoyment, we give up spiritual. If you want spiritual, we have to give up material enjoyment. So that's why the 10th aparad is to remain materially attached in spite of all of the instructions. Still, we don't want to give up material attachment. So, therefore, this is a prerequisite for advancing in devotional service. Even though we have attachments, we are striving to give them up. We don't want to have these attachments. It's not favorable for our advancement. We want to give all this up and we want to become attached to Krishna. They're opposites, so we want to give them up. They're very, very important. So this is perfected in the higher stages of devotional service. In the beginning, we still have attachment. Even if we want to give them up, still we've got attachment. But the point is we should not try to increase the attachment. We should still be striving to decrease it all the time. And therefore we have to keep increasing our devotional activities. And eventually they get less and less. As our attachment to Krishna becomes more and more, then our attachment to the material things becomes less and less. It's automatic. If you have one, you have to give up the other. So if you have attachment to Krishna, it means you have less attachment for material nature. So in this way, Vishwanatha Chakravarti actually has explained that it's a proportional. Just like if I have a glass of water here, if it's full of water, then automatically there's no air there. If it's now it is 75% water, so then it'll be 25% air. If it's 50% water, then it's 50% air. And if it's 20% water, it's 80% air. And automatically, one's not there, the other is there. So if you have 100% attachment to material nature, then obviously you have zero attraction for Krishna. If you have 5% attraction for Krishna, you have 95% attraction for material enjoyment. If you have 50% attraction for Krishna, you have 50% attraction for material nature. If you have 80% attraction to Krishna, then you have 20% for Maya. You have 90%, 95% for Krishna, you get 5% for Maya. If you got 100% for Krishna, then you get 0% for Maya. So in sadhana bhakti, gradually we start with 99% Maya, 1% Krishna. And then we start increasing for Krishna and decreasing Maya influence. And when we get to bhava, maybe it's 99% for Krishna, 1% Maya there. Or maybe 0.1% or something like that. And when it's prema, then it's 100% Krishna, it's 0 for Maya. So that's the progress that one goes through. So bhakti is the process of developing more and more commitment to Krishna. Consequently, there's less for Maya. So the detachment from material things is, we can say, automatic with our attachment to Krishna. However, we have to beware, because if we're doing our devotional service and developing our detachment, we cannot simultaneously start agitating our attachments again. Then that stops the progress of our attachment to Krishna. So that's why we have what's called sense control and rules and regulations to guide our sense, restrict our sense gratification gradually. If we start indulging, and developing more attachments, then it is difficult to progress. Naturally, the attachment to material things decreases with the performance of bhakti. But if simultaneous to the bhakti we start engaging in the material activities and developing our attachments, then it doesn't work. You cannot go in both directions at once. So we develop our devotion, but we have to be careful to restrict our material attachments. So Krishna is very merciful, and he doesn't expect all at once you have to give up all your attachments. So that is why we say that the holy name is most merciful. Everybody can take part, even if you are attached in the material world. You can start by chanting Hare Krishna even. So you've got a lot of attachments, but you can still start somewhere if you've got a little faith. But still you have to have a little bit of desire to get out. And based on that you can begin. But then, if you want to be serious, then you have to start restricting more and more. That is a sign of a serious devotee. He's willing to give up things. He's willing to follow regulative principles. That's a restriction on the attachments. A restriction on one's enjoyment in the material world. So that this is required. We have to, at a certain point, begin to restrict. And at the same time, practice our devotional activities to bring us more attraction for Krishna. And even then, it is not complete denial of sense gratification. It is sense gratification within some limits. We don't give up eating, and one is allowed grihastha life also. And one is allowed attachment to children, and one is allowed attachment to house, but is restricted a little bit. It is not so gross as the materialist. So there's some restriction there. And Lord Chaitanya gave the instruction to Raghunath that you should go home, you should not run away so artificially and try to renounce everything. You stay in your house. So he said, you enter into your house, but don't become mad. Don't develop your attachments too much for your family life. Become a little aloof from it all. You stay there, you have some attachment is there, so you stay there, but don't increase the attachment. Don't become put under illusion by all these attachments and commitments. So it is allowed, but at the same time one has to become a little detached gradually. So this also is built into the Varnashram system, because the Varnashram system realizes that people are attached, and by association they become more attached. So therefore, if you get married and become a grihastha and have a house and have children and have relatives and family, automatically there's temptation to become more and more attached and get more and more caught up in material obligations. In spite of the fact that we say you have to become detached. So therefore, there's even a system there for detachment. So they say that after you're married, then you have to detach yourself and take vanaprastha, which means you give up your house, and you give up your children, and you give up your relatives, and you give up your wealth. That's a stage that one has to go through after married life. So therefore, it's like a warning that sooner or later you're going to have to give it up anyway. So even when you're a grihastha, you should practice a little bit to become detached. Because if you become a grihastha, then physically you have to leave. So you better start practicing detachment now. So this is understood in the Varnashram system. This, of course, is not even bhakti, it's Varnashram. But even there, in pursuit of artha, dharma, kama, and moksha, there is a recognition that that association can lead to more and more attachment. Therefore, we got to restrict it somehow. So therefore, the institution of Varnashram, of Vanaprastha, is there to make everyone a little detached from their grihastha life. And okay, once they raise the children, then finish, renounce everything, renounce the house. So in this way, there's some built-in systems for developing detachment in Varnashram. So in bhakti also we have to, though our concentration is upon developing attraction to Krishna, still we have to follow some rules for detachment also. So we have four regulated principles, and then we have rules for grihasthas to follow, etc. And we also incorporate Varnashram system, and grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, all these things also we understand as goals of our, as we get older. So in this way, we don't become too attached once we're in household life. Anyway, Krishna allows a gradual surrender. He doesn't demand take everything away at once. He allows a gradual detachment. So this is advisable. Sudden renunciation is not recommended. A gradual recommendation is recommended. Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls it sahaj vairagya, or natural renunciation. By the performance of devotional service following rules and regulation, then naturally over time, with our attraction to Krishna, and then we develop detachment from material things. It's an easier system than trying to renounce suddenly, like the yogis will have to go off into the forest and stop speaking and stop eating and stop associating with people. It's a difficult process. So easier process is gradually work through, even as a grihastha, work through and carry out one's household duties, because there is attachment, and at the same time do one's spiritual activities and develop more and more commitment to that as one goes on in life. So anyway, detachment from material things is there, and the devotee, as it says here, gives up everything for the Supreme Lord, and ultimately has no interest in these things, and therefore the Lord sees the seriousness of the devotee's commitment. He's given everything for the Lord. So how can the Lord refuse him? He has to do everything for that devotee. Whatever the devotee has given everything for, up everything for the Supreme Lord, so therefore the Lord is committed to that devotee, and he will do everything for that devotee. The devotee gives his life to Krishna, and Krishna gives his life to the devotee. So this is natural from the point of view of affection and response. One who is affectionate will respond very suitably to a person. So the devotee gives up everything for the Lord, and the Lord gives up everything for the devotee. This is exemplified ultimately by the gopis. Why the gopis are considered the most exalted devotees is because they give up everything for Krishna without second thoughts. And they're in a very difficult position, because they are married, and they have husbands, and they have children even, and yet for Krishna they will do anything. They will give up everything, and they will give up their husbands, they'll give up their children, they'll give up their reputation, give up everything simply for Krishna. So they sacrifice everything for him. So if they do that, then Krishna cannot refuse. He has to satisfy them. If they give up everything, then Krishna says, yes, I will give up everything for you also. So they're considered the most exalted devotees, because in spite of all obstacles, they overcome those obstacles to serve the Supreme Lord. So similarly, all the devotees have to have this attitude of giving up their material attachments and giving everything to the Supreme Lord. Our process of renunciation or vairagya is not that we give up everything, but we give everything to the Lord. That is yukta vairagya. To give up everything is phalgu vairagya. That's renunciation. So Lord Chaitanya, when he took sannyas, then he said that sannyas means to give up everything. But when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, then he quoted a verse from the Bhagavatam, the Avanti Brahmana. He was kicked out of his house, and then he became a sannyasi because he was forcibly renounced and kicked out of his house by his relatives and his family members. So then he took sannyas, and then he said that actually renunciation means to give everything to the Supreme Lord. Not for me, for the Supreme Lord. That is real renunciation. Not just to give everything up, but to give everything to the Supreme Lord. That is real renunciation. So Lord Chaitanya quoted that verse when he took sannyas. And real sannyas means to give everything to Krishna. So that is the attitude of the devotee of the Lord. And therefore the Lord responds to that. And he does everything for the devotee. Okay, question.
Maharaj, you could speak a bit about Krust. My understanding about Krust is that the husband and wife and the kids are grown up and so on.
Yeah.
They kind of pack their bags and
they go off somewhere.
They head off together to the holy places.
Yeah.
I guess one of them dies on the way, or is there a sort of process where they actually then the two of them bifurcate?
Oh, well, they can stay together as vanaprasthas. Traditionally in the forest, often they will stay together. They'll take vanaprastha and they live together in the forest very simply. Traditionally, they get trees, the bark off the trees, and they wear that as cloth, and they dig out roots from the forest and they eat that. That's their food. They don't even cook food. They just take raw fruits and roots, eat it. In the forest, they build a little house out of, you know, twigs and stuff, and they sleep on the ground, and they live very simply. So they don't have to, they don't separate at that time. Sannyas means separate from the wife. So not necessarily they separate at that point, but they separate from the family members, and they separate from their house and their properties. Huh? So traditionally it's considered, it's called a life of austerity, where you renounce everything. And sannyas is renunciation plus concentration on the Lord. So in other words, vanaprastha is a preliminary for sannyas, where one becomes detached from all the attachments one accrued during grihastha life. One has to start forgetting all those attachments, so it's like a period where you live apart from all the, you know, family members and things like that, and it's like a transit, you know, a stage before sannyas.
Our situation living grihastha life. We've got families. We're not like going to Gurukul. Our kids aren't at Gurukul and such. They're at normal schools.
Mm.
So we've got a mixture, a big mixture of, you know, they want to watch, you know, Disney programs, you know, whatever, you know, Jurassic Park or something. But
well, it's not so bad. It's worse things than that.
You're saying we can just, you know, have a, we've got to get some kind of balance there. You know, they don't want to watch you put Krishna, you know, you put, you know, something, you know, they're not seeing that, you know. So we've got to just be careful as householders that we get a balance, we get something.
What, for the children?
Yeah.
As far as the children.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course, it is according to Bhagavatam, it's the responsibility of the parents to deliver their children from birth and death somehow or other. Now, if the children don't want to listen, that's another point. Huh? Of course, on the other hand, we have someone like Prahlad, who's the opposite. His father wanted to make him materialist, and Prahlad wouldn't listen to that. He wanted to be spiritual and convert all of his friends also. Anyway, the parents, their duty is to try to their utmost to, you know, make their children Krishna conscious, whatever. But then again, it's very difficult to force anybody. Hmm? Just as Srinivas Kashyapu could not force Prahlad also to be a demon. So we cannot force our children to be devotees also. We can only give opportunities. We give the opportunities, we've done our duty. And we try to our best. Well, we cannot force in any way also. So we give the opportunities, that's all. And if they take them up, fine. If they don't, what can we do?
So there's like a point there. You have to actually be friends with them as well.
Yeah.
You have to be there.
Well, of course, parents, as far as parenthood is concerned, there's a little balance there. One can be friendly, but even as a friend or as a parent, one doesn't let someone do, a dependent do whatever they want all the time. Just like a little child, you just don't let them do whatever they want all the time, otherwise they become spoiled children. So you got to restrict them sometimes, you got to punish them sometimes also, if necessary. Some children don't get punishment because they somehow obey, others don't. Then you have to use a little force sometimes. Okay. So, of course, as the children get older, that becomes a little more difficult. More difficult as they get older, especially now after 15 or something, very difficult to control. You can't use the same force anymore. It's very difficult. Nevertheless, one can make one's own standards very clear. That's all. What one expects, whatever. If they can't follow, what can we do, maybe? If they want to be independent, okay, let them be independent, live separately, whatever they want to do at that point. Then we can take no more responsibility for them in one sense. Yeah? We can give good advice, but if they don't want to follow, what to do? But of course, the attitude should be that because as a parent, one should show affection for the children, then there should also be an understanding that we're doing this not because we hate you, but we're giving this advice because we have some affection. That's all. Huh? Well, can't accept, what can we do?
Sorry, if you're watching something that they're watching, because everything's coming from Krishna, situated, and you've got to try and relate everything to, you know, Krishna, you know, somehow, you know.
Yeah.
So that could be a challenge, you know. Then you can make some comments, you can...
Yeah, and somehow or other we can try to relate everything to Krishna.
You have to stay conscious and not get sucked in,
yeah,
isn't it?
Of course, everything in the material world, we can find some lesson there to teach. You know.
Mm-hmm.
whatever is there. There's some good lessons there that we can point out for them.
The role of the eldest son. It's the father dies, or the father takes sannyas. Then I believe the eldest son, or does the wife,
he protects the the widow, so-called widow.
So, is that a sort of responsibility that one has to take? I mean,
the eldest son?
Yeah, technically.
Technically, yeah, that's the duty of the children to protect the parents, and particularly if the husband takes sannyas, then she's alone, so she needs protection, so then the children have to, unless she voluntarily goes off to some ashram, widow's ashram, someplace in the Holy Dham. Otherwise, the children are obligated to protect her. They cannot leave her out just nowhere. You know? So the children have to, some of the children have to do that. Protect her.
Protect means?
Take care of her food needs, housing, etc., whatever.
What if a devotee, for example, he's a musician, and then he can improve his skills in the singing, in the playing instruments. It seems that he can use it both ways. I mean, he's not still pure. And then how are we going to consider this? Is it a material improvement?
Well, material improvement, we do something so we can get money to get our sense gratification. But let's say we're doing music and we want to improve that skill so we can sing about Krishna, then it's not a material improvement, it's spiritual. Depends on the goal of our endeavors. Of course, we could always justify everything and say it's spiritual. If we're using it for material gain, then it's material. If we're just trying to get some material assets through our abilities and improve those abilities to get more money so we can buy more things for ourselves, then it's material. That'll mean material attachment increases. If you use those skills for Krishna also, then it's okay.
But if the let's say you're a musician and you enjoy practicing, there's actually an intrinsic pleasure, say the gardening or being a musician.
Yeah.
I mean, are we puritanical to say if it's nice, we don't, it's mine.
I
enjoy doing this, and I'm doing it for Krishna, but I actually also enjoy doing it for myself as well.
We can say that's one's recreation. It could be one's recreation, or it could be one's job also. One enjoys one's job and has a job doing what one's like. If it's a job, then there's no problem with it, because one has to have an occupation also. And if one acts according to one's ability in one occupation, that's considered ideal. So one can support oneself that way, and there's no criticism of that. If it's recreation to a limited extent, there's no problem with that, as long as it's not sinful, doesn't go off the edge into sinful activities.
But if that's what Krishna is saying, is that as a musician for Krishna, he actually enjoys playing for Krishna, but he enjoys becoming more proficient as a musician.
So there's no problem with that, because you all use that proficiency for serving Krishna. So there's nothing wrong with that. Not of any ability we have, we can dovetail that with service to Krishna, and there's no problem for that.
It seems to be, I notice there's a propensity to think that if you're a devotee, you have to be suffering. You can enjoy being a devotee, enjoy what you're doing.
Well, Krishna says the devotional service process is what? Happily performed. Susukam kartam avyayam is happily performed. So it would depend on the person. Some people will suffer due to the renunciation they undergo because they're so attached. So that's a problem. They've probably taken more than they can chew, so to speak, And they put themselves in a higher position than they can maintain. So therefore, generally, they jump back down again into the enjoyment again because of that. Other people are naturally not so attached anyway. So it's more easy for them. They don't care. They don't care for all these material things, and they're not ambitious to acquire so many things in the material world. So they don't worry about that, and they go on living simply. It's no problem for them. So it depends on one's, let's say, natural initial amount of detachment or attachment, and then we perform devotion.
To be like that, because that person is trying trying, they want to, you know, improve the peace in the spiritual life.
Yeah.
So Krishna would appreciate that the effort they put in.
Yeah, but then again, Bhagavatam says one should act according to one's qualifications, not go beyond the qualifications. Just like he says, the Brahmin should act as a Brahmin, and, you know, don't do another person's job because that'll create, you know, problems. Huh? And so don't go beyond your gunas. So apart from, of course, Varnashram system, just according to our level of spiritual advancement, we can be ambitious, but we should not be overly ambitious and, you know, go too far and try to put ourselves on a higher standard that we're not capable of, and then we have to fall back down again. Yeah.
So would that be over-endeavoring?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we should just gradually work our way upwards, you know, like that.
What role does the spiritual master play in giving us proper guidance? Does that come from the spiritual master to tell us where we're at, actually?
Well, I think it's we should not expect the spiritual master to be omniscient and understand our every quality and desire and qualification and propensity, etc. And that's only Krishna knows that, and even he won't display that to you, you know, up front all the time. So we can say it's a matter of our own intelligence combined with the spiritual master's wisdom, and you reveal what you can to the spiritual master based on that. Then he could, if you have some problem, then he can give some advice based on what you can tell him. So it's, let's say it's mutual. It's not this one way that he decides for you with looking at you or something. So generally the devotee has to find that exact medium which is not too high, not too low. To go too low is also called laziness. This is very nice for me because it's the lowest possible standard I can set. So we shouldn't be down, you know, just doing something so easy that it's almost minimal, you know. We also have to set some standard which is, you know, comfortable for us. Not too low and then not too high that we cannot do it also. And then based on that, we have to strive to go higher and higher and higher. That's all. And not strive to stay in the same position. We cannot justify ourselves and say, well, I'll do this forever because it feels nice. Eventually you have to start striving to get to a higher level.
If you could go back to a level, if you know you have to spend a bit of time at a certain level, you can go back knowing that you're only there for a short while and you're going to come out.
Yeah. But of course the idea is that if we're going to go up, we should make sure that we've already solid on that first level, and we can go to the next level and gradually work our way up there. And rather than go up and down, up and down, keep experimenting, because that also creates disturbance, you know. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's like climbing up stairs. You put your foot on one stair, then you put the foot down, make it firm, then you withdraw the other foot and stick it up. When the 2 feet are there, then you take your next foot and you start putting it up on the next run. When that's very firm, then you withdraw the other foot and you stick it up there like this. And gradually you go up like that. So gradually you work your way up to higher qualifications. And when you're steady in one level, then you detach yourself from the lower levels and work on that level. Then you start aspiring for higher levels like that and become steady in that. Then you withdraw yourself from the lower level like that and go up.
Using our attachments, we can observe. But sometimes, due to maturity, we never actually reach a state of variety itself, speed of variety. And then, due to weakness in heart, we cheating ourselves and in the name of the variety, we simply enjoy. We can see again and again. And how is it?
Yeah, that's what it means. It should develop into detachment. But the point there is, the emphasis there is upon developing one's attraction to Krishna. We cannot just take the material things that you get from devotional service and start enjoying them. that will lead to, that's an anartha, that's a weed. The process of Yukta Vairagya is to use things for Krishna and to develop one's attraction for Krishna. In that process, material attachments become insignificant. And the more one develops attachment for Krishna, the less one has for things. So, in other words, as Lord Chaitanya said, real renunciation is to use everything for Krishna, not for himself. But it's not your Yukta Vairagya, don't you take the things you get in devotional service and use them for your own enjoyment? That becomes a weed. That's not Yukta Vairagya. But to utilize everything for Krishna, that's good. And not to utilize anything at all, that is Falgo Vairagya, just to renounce everything. So if one has talents, one uses talents for Krishna, then it is Yukta Vairagya.